And I'm just going to review, maybe I, you know, said some of these things last week. I just want to get back into the swing that if you look at what takes place after the flood, it really raises a lot of questions. The first thing Noah does when he gets off of the Teva is he builds his Beah, and he brings a carbon. And then it says that God, you know, so to speak, you know, smelled the pleasant aroma. And then God said that he won't curse the earth anymore, that he won't destroy the earth because of Adam anymore. And, you know, for the duration of the existence of the world, you know, all the seasons will remain, that the world as God created it will not be subject to destruction. And then it says because, seems to be the reason for this is because the Yeter Leva Adam is Raman Urav, that the inclination of his heart is evil from youth. So all this is extremely difficult because, as he said, what we assume that when God destroyed the world, it was done on the basis of absolute truth, absolute justice. This is correct. That is to say, and it's something we can understand, that the God created for a purpose. And but Adam has Bechira. He can thwart the purpose. So if he's not in line with the purpose to such an extent that he changes his nature, so then he should be destroyed. So why is God changing now? Why is God saying that he won't do it again? And also the reason that was given that the inclination is evil from youth, what does that have to do with it? Well, why would that be the reason not to destroy him? And wasn't that true before he was destroyed? And so on and so forth. And then, as we mentioned, you take a look at the Pesukim before the flood, and it's very similar. It says that that God saw that the thoughts of his heart, the inclination of the thoughts of his heart was rock, rock, koyo, even worse. So if we're going to say that the phenomenon of the inclination being evil is the reason why he shouldn't be destroyed, so then he shouldn't have been destroyed in the first place because it was even worse, it would seem, or pretty much the same thing. It was rock, rock, koyo, that's the inclination of his heart. So that determined that he should be destroyed.
We had another question.
Yeah.
By the Teva, where it says that he remembered Noah when after the flood started to go down. He remembered Noah, and that's why he took him off of the Teva.
Right.
But the whole design was that this Teva was created so that Noah would be able to survive the flood and repopulate the world.
Right.
So what does it mean he remembered Noah?
Okay, fine. But, good point. That's the point. The major questions, though, these are really major questions. I just don't want to say.
Cool. When's your birthday? I want to find
you. No, no.
So then it says that God blesses Noah and tells them to revoke. Would you take a look at Eric Tess? What's that noise, guys?
Huh? What?
There's a noise. There's a banging.
Tess.
If you take a look at Eric Tess, there's many things that we should question. Because there's a new blessing. God blesses them and says, Puruvu. That seems to be redundant because that's the blessing that was given to Adam Arishon. Doesn't seem that it needs to be renewed in every generation. Then there's something strange in Pasuk Bey. This is Tes Bey's. Morachem v'chitchen yiyah. The fear of you will be on all the beasts of the earth and all the birds of the heaven and so forth. All the swarming things, all the fish, the yedchem nitanu. Now that's a completely new idea that God is telling him that he's placing. It's not revealing a reality that this is the situation. One thing to say that a person doesn't know he's going into a forest. He doesn't know if the animals have a fear of man or not. It's one thing to tell him a fact. Here it will be. It means to say that God is doing something to place the fear of man on the animals. So this is one has to ask, is this the way it was in terms of creation, that God created the animals that way? And we do see that that's a that's a known thing, that generally speaking, animals stay away from man. They have a fear of man. Unless that's broken. You know, you can break it. Like, for example, feeding bears is not a good idea. Because as a result of that, they A, become dependent upon it, and B, they lose their fear. But other than that, in a natural state, they stay away. First, people go mountain climbing and so on and so forth. As long as the situation is not disturbed, the animals, generally speaking, stay away from man. This seems to trace back to here. But the question has to be raised, why is this something that came into being now, or is this the way it was from the very beginning? It's very, very strange. That's another important thing that to study in its own right. Is this the way God created the world? So then why is it happening now? Apparently it wasn't. So if it wasn't, then why wasn't it that way for all the generations before? It seems to be a necessary thing. Okay? Then you have the permission is given to eat meat. It's another significant development. Because Adam and Eve did not have Kiyar Gesev, Nasati Lechem Kol. That God only gave him permission to eat fruits and vegetables, but he wasn't given permission to eat meat. Now he's being given permission to eat meat. You have to account for that. What's the reason? And then, of course, it's for the warnings that once on that subject, so then it's already involved in destroying something. Apparently that's a significant thing, because if you can eat meat, it means you can destroy a living being, an animal. So then Avram and Achai comes into existence, but then God reiterates the warnings not to kill people. Shofer Sama Adam. Alright? So that these things have to be explained as well. It seems that there's a new situation over here. There's a new situation. And we have to explain that, and that's why all these new points come into being. They have to be related. They're all connected to something that happened as a result of the Mabul. Okay? Before I go on, any comments, any points? I don't need further questions. We have a lot of questions. Okay. So the question arises, we understand, if you take a look at the Torah goes to great lengths. I mean, when it goes to great lengths, it's not, in terms of the amount of Pesukim, it's not that much, but given the way the Torah describes things, it really depicts different phases in the development of the Chet. This goes back to the end of Bereishis, if you want to go back to Perek Vav. At the end of Bereishis, before Parshas Noach, it gives you, the history of the development over here. That's in Perek Vav. Vayiki heichel ha'adam l'ro al pnei ha'adama. People began to increase. Population increased. That's a factor that contributed to this corruption. Uvanos yildu lahem, and they gave birth to women, to daughters. Very cryptic, but essentially there was a change in terms of the... It would seem to me, this is my observation, I've just been doing this recently with Masoret, that as long as mankind was... I have to say that because I said at the beginning that I'm basically basing myself on the ideas of Rabbi Kate elucidated, but I have to be careful because some of the things are my own, and I don't want to attribute this to anybody else. That's the difficulty in these kinds of things. But here, it seems to me that the very increase in population was a factor contributing towards the corruption of mankind. I'm not going to go into it at great length now. I'm just going to mention that if you want to take it up later, discuss it with me, that's fine. Because I don't want to make a big issue out of this. It's not central. It's my observation that as long as mankind was small, then that held people in check. I think it's a reality that you can see in many situations. Like a lot of people go outside of New York and go to a small community, and there's a different sense that in a small community, everybody has a certain connection to everybody else. And being that everybody is small, there's a certain weakness, a certain interdependency, so then you tend to have less crime, and you tend to have people showing more concern for others, and so on and so forth. But once it gets very, very big, there's a certain impersonalization. Then, the value of each individual decreases, and then you have all these phenomena of crime and, a lack of concern for the other guy that we all associate with big cities. People that live out of town come to New York, you can see a complete difference. when you're driving and people have no patience. It's such a loss of identification with the other individual. All right, so that's part of what's going on over here. That once they began, when they were small, because it says when they began to increase, when they were small, so it was a different situation. That the people obviously held their instincts in check, their aggressiveness was held in check. Not because they were perfected. See, people make a mistake also. It's like, I remember years ago, like in the early days of Israel, people would go to Israel and they'd marvel, you know, how it's different there, you know, you could walk anywhere you want at 3 in the morning, and there'll be the doors open, and everybody cares about everybody, and, you know, how different it is in the United States. But, you know, even then, I mentioned that is that because they're really inherently different, or that's simply because of the situation, it's a circumstance. If you have the same situation in America, in certain places, you know, the same phenomenon. But let's see, when they really develop, they industrialize, and they increase, and the truth of the matter is that that situation doesn't really exist anymore. I don't mean only because of the Arabs. Even aside from that, it's not a result of an inherent perfection. It's a circumstantial phenomenon. So then they began to increase, and all of a sudden they took notice of women. So women, once women began to increase, and, you know, different, obviously when you increase, you have different kinds of women, different looks and all of that, so they began to look at women in a different way. In my opinion, it's sort of like something you have in the society today, and that is to say that the women today basically are regarded as sex objects. Take a look at the whole society, and the advertising, the culture.
Rebbe?
Yes?
Are there something wrong with the phone? We can't really hear you that well.
You can't hear me?
Now we can.
Now we can.
Because I have the small microphone. I got to talk right into it.
Okay.
But you've heard me?
Much better.
Yeah. I mean,
okay, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I just don't want to have to repeat everything.
No, I've heard you.
It
kept going down.
Okay.
It kept going lower and lower.
Yeah, because I'm using this... All right, so you hear my point. So essentially, these are the two factors. That this type of a phenomenon, this aggressiveness, this lack of identification or lack of regard... was influenced by the growth in population and also by the increase in the amount of women, because that's a key factor over here. And then the next pasuk is crucial. It says that this is an amazing pasuk. It says the Bnei Elohim saw the Bnos HaAdam Tovo Tena, that they were goodly. By Yikru HaMnashim, and they took women Mikol HaShebacharu. Now this pasuk is a study, it's a shir in its own right. I defy anyone to explain what's going on. Who are the Bnei HaElokim? And who are the Bnos HaAdam? You get the sense that there are different types of beings, that there are beings from different planets over here. But that's not the case. Actually, the truth of the matter is that this is a separate shir in its own right, to try and decipher this. But I suggest, I'm not going to get into that now. Just in a very general way, you have to go to the Mefarshim, because then it talks about the Nephilim. So it's very challenging. This parsha is very, very challenging, simply to try and figure out what the Pshat is. And who are these different groups of people? Sounds strange, like, you know, supernatural beings, Bnei Elohim, sons of God, what does that mean? However, I suggest you go through at least the Ramban. The Ramban really deciphers it. To make a long story short, because the point is crucial to the whole understanding of what takes place, without going into all the particulars, and it's very difficult to figure out the psukim. But the Ramban says that the Bnei Elohim are really a reference to, essentially, Adam and Chava, and to the early generations that came after them. Why are they called Bnei Elohim? Anyone?
Because
they were
the most effective.
I'm sorry?
Because they were the most effective.
They were the most
because they were the most affected, well, why would they be called Bnei Elohim?
Directly from God.
Yeah, because they did not come into being through the ordinary process of, you know, birth. They weren't born. They were to people. They were direct handiwork of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which means that they were in the most perfected state. That's very important, in the most pristine, perfected state. In order to understand this story, we have a certain difficulty over here, and that is we're dealing with a type of individual that we are not familiar with. We're dealing with a type of human being that's completely different than we are, not in terms of the essentials, the components. That is to say that man has never changed. The essence of man is really the physical, instinctual, and he possesses a divine element, the capacity to understand abstract truths and to utilize them in order to conquer his yetzer. That's the essence of Adam. However, the particularities, and essentially with regard to the physical dimension, the physical dimensions of a person, and the physical strength of a person, and the relationship of Adam to all the other creatures from a purely physical standpoint is completely different in the pre-Diluvian stage, to use fancy terms. That means the pre-Marvel. That's crucial. And you can see that the Pesukim are indicating that idea. B'nei Elokim is telling you that these Adam and Chava first, but then the Ramban explains succeeding generations were of a tremendous physical stature. They were of a tremendous physical dimension in terms of their size. We don't know the exact size, in terms of their power. But I think what's the most significant fact that establishes that we're dealing with people that are a completely different physical framework? What's the most significant fact?
The age?
The age factor. See, that's something that people tend to deny. They can't deal with that. Modern man can't deal with that. And then a lot of people that aren't committed to a true belief in Torah, that Torah is absolute truth, they tend to dismiss that. The fact is that these people lived almost 1,000 years. That's something that it's a real affront to modern man, to his narcissism, because every generation assumes that it's superior to everyone that preceded it, especially modern man, because we look back at others. It's not just the mere fact that we're alive and they're not, that they died, so therefore they're inferior. That's a psychological phenomenon, as absurd as it is. That's how people look at things. But we're also the beneficiaries of this tremendous technology, so we feel totally superior. Look at past generations. They'd have to travel by horse and buggy. They didn't have any telephone or television. It's like, so you automatically assume that they're inferior. However, when we encounter this, because everybody still, no matter how superior we are, people still can't solve the problem of death. And even with all modern medicine, so you can extend the lifespan 80 years, 85, you read about people that lived almost 1,000 years, and you can't accept that. But nevertheless, that's the truth. This shows that you're dealing with a being that was from a physical standpoint of a completely different dimension. The Pesukim are indicating that. And the Pesukim are indicating that in relation to something that occurred. What occurred? A tremendous corruption occurred because their energy became attached to the pursuit of these women. There were two Averos over here. Two Averos in terms of the generation. The outbreak began with the increase in desire and lust. They became attracted to women. It's a new phenomenon, like a sexual revolution, so to speak. That's one type of a thing. But this led to the other phenomenon of Chama, where there was a complete breakdown, not only in terms of the boundaries, the controls over the sexual, but also in terms of the respecting of the rights of other people. That's what the Ramban says, that they took. They took women means they took by force. They took without concern. It's an important expression by Yikru. They took, but Mikora Shebachor is even worse, because that means that they just totally disregarded other people. That means they would take married women and so on and so forth. That is, so that's the other aspect. You see over here the development of two significant corruptions. One is simply with regard to the fact that man is living like a behemoth, that his whole objective is to pursue the sexual pleasure. And the second one is that it carries over into the other area. It's one thing, because the Ramban says later on that lo nechtemu gzardinam el al hachamas. You go into Noach, when God already mentions the final decree, that there were two things. That God started the world with Nishchasa, ki yishas kol basar v'sdarko, that all people perverted their way, means to say that they were living essentially an animalistic existence, and that the world was, but the decree was, God said I'm going to destroy the world, ki malah ha'chamas of Nahum, because the world is filled with chamas. The chamas represents the interpersonal violence, the complete breakdown. Let me just explain what the Ramban says. The reason for that is, he says, says, that the reason why that is decisive is because that is something which is rational. You don't need a prophet to reveal that. Meaning to say, basically, that it's true that a person is supposed to control his instinct. He's not supposed to live an instinctual life. But even when people deviate, as long as they retain a certain type of a rationality in their existence in terms of maintaining a society. So a person realizes that he can't take somebody else's. He's going to take whatever he wants of the other person's going to do the same thing to him. There's going to be a complete breakdown in the maintenance of any kind of society, any kind of civilization. So as long as he's able to restrict himself in that area, he's still functioning as a rational being. But once it carries over into that area and everybody's cheating from everybody else and everybody's destroying everybody else, so there's a complete breakdown in terms of the rational faculty altogether. That's the ultimate destruction of Adam, that he can't function anymore. Even in these areas of self-preservation, he can't function in a rational way. So that's basically the corruption. Of course, the question arises, what were the causes? What were the causes of the corruption? And once you establish that, what was the real objective of the model? What was the true objective of the model? Okay, so again, I'm not going through all these psukim now. But if you go through them on your own, you'll see a hint. It talks about the B'nai Elohim. And then there's the B'nai Sa'adam. Then again, in David, Hanafilim Hayabar, Bayamayim, Hanafilim. And again, all these terms are difficult. Different interpretations. But that's a race, it's referring to a race of giants. They're called Nephilim, the Ramban explains, because there was a deterioration. Man experienced, the way the Ramban explains it, that once people, as long as people acted correctly, up until the generation basically of Enosh, that they weren't involved in idolatry, so it says that they, by Yoled, that they gave birth to children in their own image. Meaning to say, in their own image, that they retained that high degree of perfection, of physical perfection, just like their parents. So they too are the B'nai Elohim. But when the B'nai Elohim began to deviate, and to become involved in the sexual, and also he said when they began to become corrupted in terms of idolatry. But that's the Rambam explains as far as Enosh is concerned, you know, that they began to introduce different forms of worship, the worshiping of the stars and so forth. There's a whole deterioration over there. That affected them in a physical way, and they began to diminish. So they began to, another generation of the Nephilim, which was inferior. It was inferior to the original generation, but it was still a race of giants. Then it says, V'gam achreichein, and they began to reproduce themselves. He said, Asher yavod b'nei ha'olakim ha'b'nos ha'adam v'yodu, v'anhem ha'giborim. These people were the giborim. Asher me'olam anshei Hashem. They were people of tremendous renown. Again, what you have over here is that this type of a corruption that took place and spread throughout the entire world was essentially initiated by a group of people that were of gigantic proportions. Giborim, extremely powerful people. So what does one thing have to do with the other? What was the underlying cause of this tremendous corruption that spread throughout the entire world? And then it says, you know, if you go to the psukim, then God saw Kiraba Ra to Adam, the increase. So the first phase is the outbreak of the disease, so to speak. This type of a behavior becomes established. But then the question is, will it remain restricted? Like in our society today, there's a lot of corruption, but sometimes it's just restricted. It doesn't spread throughout the entire society. What's happening over here is that it's not restricted. You have the increase, the expansion. It begins to spread throughout the entire society. That's one thing. And the Chol Yetzer Machshavos Libo, Rak Rak Kol Hayom. That's another thing, is that you have a lot of perversion in this society, especially now with the internet and so forth. But is it Rak Rak Kol Hayom? A lot of these people, it's a recreation, it's a diversion. But it's not all day long, because they have to all day long. They go to work, they have to start it, whatever it is. But then, in their spare time, this is what they derive their pleasure from. It's not Rak Rak Kol Hayom. But Rak Rak Kol Hayom means that this becomes the essence, that they're completely involved in this throughout the entire day. This consumes their entire personality. That's another development. And of course you can see And God said in Pasuk Gimel that Vayadon Ruchi Ba'adam Ba'olam, that if this type of phenomenon continues, that my spirit, which is a reference to that Tzelem Elokim in Adam, that Adam is a unique, fragile type of a being, that he's essentially an instinctual or physical being, but he has the Tzelem Elokim, and the Tzelem Elokim is supposed to rule over the other part. And however, as a result of these behaviors and the involvement in lust, so then that's going to destroy the Tzelem Elokim. It will just be like a behemoth. It won't manifest itself. And that's what it says, Vahayama. It'll only have 120 years. Maybe as Mishana, I'll have 120 years. Means that God, it's a mistake people make. They think that that's the lifespan of man. It's not. It means that God is giving mankind 120 years to do tshuva. But God doesn't punish them until the sin reaches complete dimension. So they have a chance to do tshuva. They have free will. Then the second phase is Vayinachem Hashem, so to speak. Everything is so to speak. Then God says he's going to obliterate Adam. The final phase is in Parshas Noach. Then the David mentions the fact that Noach came into being, and then he decided, then Matachin, and then Matishachay to Arat Basnei Halakim. Matimale Arat Chamash. That's the final phase. The final phase is that it becomes institutionalized, it becomes locked in. Every facet of society is corrupted, and there's no possibility of change at this point. And then it says that God saw that the world was Nishchasa, and Ishus called Basar. Okay, that was the cause. It's interesting. Take a look at Yud-Bey. In Perek Vav Pasuk Yud-Bey, you have the two factors. It says that God saw that it was all Nishchasa, Ishus called Basar. But then in the, when he speaks to Noah, Kate called Basar, he Kate called Basar. That's it. The end. It's interesting because in the previous passage it says God saw the hashchasa, the corruption, the sexual corruption. But in the indictment it's the chamas. Because it seems that those two things are related. The underlying cause was the sexual. Interesting point is that you see that in our society people always differentiate between the two. And they say that one thing has nothing to do with the other. That we can be moral, we can be ethical, we can be humanitarian. But that doesn't mean that we have to control ourselves. In the sexual area, that's totally different, and there's no right and wrong in that area, and whatever you enjoy, you're fine, as long as you don't hurt anybody. See, but God just maintains that once you give in to that, once you break down the barriers in the sexual area, then it crosses over the boundary lines and it affects you in all the areas. You can see that now, sorry, today. All the economic corruptions and the theft and the cheating and so forth. Okay. So now, I think we have a better understanding as to what the cause was, what the cause of the chait was. And Chazal say, and again, that doesn't mean, I don't know if it's taken literally, I don't have the Chazal in front of me, but they explain, I'm just paraphrasing roughly, that Adam only sinned because of the good that God had done for him. That God had done something very good for him, and he rebelled because of it. And that is to say that before the mabul, a person would plant once in 40 years, and the earth would give forth all the fruits and so forth. Indicate the number of factors that the climactic conditions were such that the type of fruit and vegetables that were produced by the world in that time was a totally different dimension. And Adam himself would traverse the world, he'd go across the entire world in a very short period of time, and he'd uproot mighty oak trees, cedar trees, with his bare hands, and leopards and whatever, with a tire, he would be able to destroy them with his bare hands, that type of thing. Again, I don't know what exactly is literal, but it's conveying something. So what's it conveying over here? What's the idea? Let's pause for a second. And they're connecting this type of an idea, that Adam was this giant, was this powerful being, and all the animals were like nothing to him. And the fact is that he could, again, he had tremendous sustenance from the fruits, the vegetables, all a result of the climactic conditions. And because of this, he sinned. What does that mean? Why would he sin? Means to say that has a, you know, an ego. When people feel tremendously secure within themselves, and tremendously powerful, so then they turn away from God. That emotion of man being a supreme being, not needing God, that comes out. Whenever a person, that's a reality even today. I mean, when a person feels powerful and strong and secure, so he's less dependent upon God. When a person gets ill and he's weak, that's what the Torah always warns the Jews, even and when they go into Eretz Yisrael. That when you become secure and all of that, you'll turn away from God. When a person, of course, is experiencing difficulties and dangers and he's weak, then he turns to God. So, if man could achieve a state where he felt so powerful and so comfortable within himself, that there was never a moment when he felt that weakness, that he acknowledged the existence of any other being outside of himself that he really was dependent upon. Once he achieved that state of supremacy, so then there's nothing that can stop him. Then he's a conqueror, yes, and then whatever he wants, he's a... You see people like that. When a person feels that he's the center of the world and he's so powerful, it breaks down any barrier. That essentially is what the Chazal are saying. That the chait resulted from that God created man in a perfected type of a physical condition that was all for his benefit. They lived for hundreds and hundreds of years, and he reigned supreme over the entire creation. As a result of this, he had tremendous, tremendous energy. If he would have utilized it for the correct purpose, so then he would be able to achieve tremendous spiritual perfection. But if he misuses it, and if he allows it to go to his head, and to believe that he himself is superior and supreme because he has these qualities, he looks at the rest of the world and sees how powerful he is, and he feels that this is because of him, so then he becomes the most corrupt being. That was the challenge that people had in those days. That's why it refers to these gigantic beings and so forth. They're clearly a significant element in these corruptions. So that reached the point of such hate that God said that this is not Adam anymore. It has to be destroyed. But now you have to understand what exactly is the marble. And there are two ways that you can understand the marble. Two ways. One way is to simply say, and I think that most people look at the marble this way, simplistic kind of a way, that everybody was corrupt, Noach was tzaddik, so God wanted to destroy the corrupt, save Noach, so that's all. So God wrote a marvel to destroy the corrupt, and Noach was saved, and that's it. That's the simplistic way of learning it. But is there another way to learn the marvel? Anyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm trying to talk right into the piece here. Is that how you learn the marble?
Well, what specifically are you focusing on? Is saying like there's two approach? I mean,
two ways. But if it's not clear, you got to tell me. I thought it's clear.
Maybe it's a little general. I'm just not sure.
It is very general, but it's completely different. That is to say, that let's say people become corrupt. I guess like maybe stolen a motor, so they're corrupt. So, but let's say there is 10 people that are not. So God comes in, destroys the corrupt, and the 10 remain. But that's it. There's no change, no other change besides that. Is that the idea of the marvel that God just executes the guilty and now they're sitting in the loose? Same situation as before. No. Same situation as before, except we've gotten rid of the bad guys.
No, because afterward there's changes
If you're going to maintain that, so then all the psukim afterwards are going to be very, very difficult to understand. So what's the alternative way?
It's a different world.
By the way, you see also that you go into the psukim, if it's just a question of destroying the wicked, so that could have been accomplished in a relatively short period of time. Even if it's through water, I mean, how long do you get? One day. One day you bring down the water and everybody drowns. That's the end of that. But you see, it goes on for a long period of time. it keeps describing the waters get higher and higher. And Chazal mentioned that there were all kinds of things going on, fires and water and explosions and all kinds of cataclysmic events are going on. I'm not going to do all the pesukim. You see, even afterwards, when the waters diminish, describes the waters diminish, and he sends out the birds, and that, but nevertheless, he didn't get off the cave until God instructs him. I mean, people ask that question too. Why didn't he just get off? But you see, you're right. If it's simply a matter of destruction, but no change, so then that question would be stronger. But if it's more than that, it's not just the destruction, but it's a cataclysmic event. Things that are going on which are going to make a very, very significant change in the physical factors, climatic changes, and so on and so forth, so that a new world is going to emerge, a new world. And things are going to be very radically different than they were before. And that makes all these things make sense. But a whole year takes place till it gets off the table. And all the different things that are going on, that Chazal allude to. Therefore, the Ramban says, that there were two things going on. There was destruction, and then there was recreation. And therefore, because this was an adjustment, so to speak. Midas Hadin was that, in terms of the absolute, this is the way Adam was supposed to be. This was the ideal. You have a number of these things going on in Bereshit, just like Adam's nature was changed as a result of the first race, and he was given a whole new component, the component of conscience, of superego, in order to control the instinctual, because that's the only way he could now continue to exist, because he's been corrupted. A similar thing is happening over here. A very significant change is occurring with regard to the physical constitution of the environment, of the universe in which he exists, and most essentially, the Adam that emerges from the Teva is not the same person. Very, very dramatic changes have occurred. Most significantly, it'll be expressed in the fact you see that the lifespan of man begins to diminish, till it comes basically to where we're at today. And that is to say, if a person lives to 80...
Can I make you up louder again?
If a person lives to 80, 85, that's a long life. All this is a result of the physical changes that occurred, because Adam, as that all-powerful being, who was the most powerful physical creature in the universe, could no longer sustain himself, because he had sinned irrevocably. Now, if you understand this, everything will fit in. It's a new Adam that emerges, and Adam too was affected by this. Adam too had a certain hachna, a certain subservience. And that's expressed by the fact, the idea, that these changes that have occurred, and which have affected people, have produced a certain subservience, is expressed by the fact that as soon as he gets off the table, he builds a mizbeach, and he brings karma. And that's the idea of ayarach. Ayarach means that God took note of this new phenomenon, even within Noah. This new achna, which, because the Torah doesn't describe that he brought karbanos before, right, he was an ishtaret, true. But this bringing of a karban as a natural result expresses, this is really indicative. It doesn't mean that God smelled the pleasant aroma. It means that God took note of this, God approved of this. It is this factor which is responsible for the fact that God will never destroy the world again, because the new element in Adam, that Adam will not ever achieve that state of a feeling of absolute supremacy, it's impossible for him ever to achieve that again to the extent and to permeate the entire world to the extent that it would produce that type of corruption. That's what it says. Now you understand the pasuk. Because Yetalev Adam is Ra Minu'urav. Yeah, Minu'urav. As Rabbi Kate explained, Minu'urav means to say that feeling that we're talking about, that Ra, that feeling of absolute supremacy, that I'm going to live forever, that I'm the master of the universe, you have people that express that, but it's only in youth. That feeling is only in youth now. Because in youth, a person has that, some people have that feeling. Athletes and strong people, whatever they need, they're consumed with that, but it's only in youth. Then he gets a little older, and he gets an injury, an ankle, and this thing, and the other thing, and by the time he's 30, he can't sustain that feeling anymore. That's what it means. It's only manure. Mm-hmm. But if you go back to before, if you go back to the person before, it was rock, kolayel, which means that feeling existed within him permanently, because there was nothing, he was so powerful, he didn't get ill. He didn't suffer from all these things. I mean, the new situation encompasses many things. you take a look at the life of a person today, you see that there are some people that are extremely powerful and all of that, and they have this feeling of that, they're filled with this feeling about themselves, but it can't, it's not sustained. I mean, even in youth, you know, even guys in the yeshiva already, you have cold, you have sniffles, you have allergies, you have back pains, you have this, you have that. So the idea of immortality based upon the physical is very, it's impossible to sustain. It's a fundamental change in man. He's significantly humbled now, and that's really a blessing in terms of his spiritual life.
Yes. Says that Hashem said that after he smelt the offering, the korban.
Right.
So what does the korban have to do with that?
Yeah, that korban is reflective of that, symbolic of that.
Of what?
That korban means that man recognizes that everything comes from God.
Recognizes that what?
That everything comes from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's the whole essence of a korban.
So he's saying this recognition is going to become more of a... How does smelling the korban mean... How is that related to Hashem saying you won't destroy the world again?
I just explained it. The korban, the fact that he brings the korban, expresses this idea. The korban...
That man's going to have a greater recognition of God now?
It's man's subservience to God. Throughout the generation of the Mabul, there was no korban, because to the contrary, people felt they didn't need God. They were the masters. So it's that activity which expresses it. You see?
So you mean now there's going to be more of a recognition of God?
Now there'll be more of a recognition of God, because that is to say like this. When man achieves a certain sense of self-confidence, of power, so then he denies God. But due to the fact that man can never again ever achieve that, not in a permanent basis. I mean, when he's young, the moment he has this craziness, you know, youthful craziness, but then he outgrows it. So that achna, that element of weakness which produces the achna and leads man to bring carbon, that is the element which is responsible for the fact that God will never destroy it again. Because it'll never come to that point again. Okay? Now, that expresses, see, now you can understand the whole idea of a bracha. It's a new Adam that emerges. So therefore, God now, God gives this new Adam a blessing. It's not the same Adam anymore, so to speak. Puravu and so forth. But if you take a look, for example, what does it say? That I will place the fear of you on the animals. That's an amazing confirmation. What does that show? That originally that situation didn't exist. God didn't have to place anything in terms of the animals because they were naturally inferior to man. Man was the most powerful being in the world. But now that man is much weaker than the animals, and the animals can destroy him, so there's a real danger. So therefore, he's placing the fear of him on the animals, because it's not the same being anymore. Also, for example, the permission to eat meat. That too seems to fit into this, because beforehand it says that he would plant once in 40 years. It means that there's such a fundamental change in the climatic conditions, which affects the produce and the fruits and so forth, so it's not before he didn't eat meat. But now, it's different. Now it's not sufficient in order to sustain him, and now God is giving him permission to eat meat. That also is indicative of this idea. So basically, the overview is that the cause of the chait, the corruption, tremendous corruption, which led to the chait, had to do with man's tremendous physical power. And, of course, he had Bechira. I mean, why did God make him that way? I mean, that's Bechira. That if he would have been able to overcome these emotions and to be intelligent, then he would have utilized all of that for the good. But he didn't. So, therefore, it was necessary to make this fundamental change. As a result of this fundamental change, Adam can continue to exist. And now we can understand the idea of the rainbow. And this is actually its explanation. I think it fits beautifully into this. And the idea of the rainbow only makes sense in terms of what we said, that the marvel is two things. It's destruction and recreation happening simultaneously. That's what the Chazals are really trying to show. That there's water and there's fire, there's destruction and recreation. So what's the sign of the... What is the essence of the bris? What is the hope of man that he won't be destroyed? It's the fact that his nature has been changed in such a way that, from a physical standpoint, this advantageous, but from a spiritual standpoint, it's the factor which is going to serve him. Because God now built into the situation certain preventions, certain safeguards that would prevent man from ever reaching that degree of corruption. So that's really expressed in the rainbow. Why the rainbow? The rainbow wasn't created for this purpose. The rainbow existed. But now it fits perfectly the idea. Because the idea of the rainbow is essentially that when you take water and you pass it over a prism, so it breaks down into different colors. And then when you remove it, the prism, so then it goes back to the same color. So what is that, Joe? It's really a reference to the Mabel as the second creation. So there were, it turns out according to this, that there were two creations. There was the original creation, and then there was the creation of the Mabel, destruction and recreation, so to speak. So, what is the hallmark of the first creation? The hallmark of the first creation is there was Yesh Me'ayin. Right? That God brought the world into existence from nothing. Yesh Me'ayin. But what was the hallmark of the second creation? Was that Yesh Me'ayin?
Yesh.
No. God simply brought a change. It was basically separation and recombination. Because the matter was the same. So it wasn't Yesh Me'ayin, but it was, as we said, separation and recreation. So really, the way Rabbi Kate explained it, was that that's what the rainbow indicates. The rainbow is a phenomenon. When you separate, it goes into many colors, and you remove it, there's recombination. So that's the perfect expression, the perfect symbol, so to speak, of the new phenomenon. When a person looks at the rainbow and he thinks about that all the ideas associated with the marble, that it was a destruction and a recreation, and because of that recreation, Adam is now in a completely different physical matav situation, so that he will always have a certain hachnah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the factor, that's what he should remember. That's the factor which ensures his salvation, so to speak, in the sense that he won't be destroyed again.
That relates to the separation, the destruction and recreation?
The rainbow, what happens in a rainbow? It's the phenomenon of...
The water is diffracted. Right,
so now you understand it, right? So that really expresses the idea of separation and combination. Right?
Okay, separation and combination, okay.
So that's the idea of the second creation. The second creation was not a creation of Yesh Me'ayin. It partakes of that element that God, so to speak, broke down. There's a breaking down. Right? That's the destruction. In other words, when you recreate, let's say you have a house and you want to recreate it, so you break it down, and then you recombine. You combine, recombine in a different way. So that those two elements are expressed in the phenomenon of the rainbow. So it's a perfect... So you have something in the world of nature which occurs from time to time, and it was designated by God as the perfect element to remind people of these ideas. That's why the rainbow, the sign of the rainbow, is a sign of God's hashgacha, that God, recreated the world. Well, what's difficult?
Okay.
Is that clear to everybody?
Yeah.
Okay, any parting remarks?
Yeah, Rabbi Ma'am?
Yes.
So the marble was really like a correction?
Yeah, if you want to use that term.
Right.
I mean, that's a new thing. I covered a lot of things in a short period of time now. You have to really review them. It would have been better, perhaps. I don't know. You know, it's not the forum in which to do this.
I'm just saying it was a correction in order to make all these changes that would keep his superego in check.
To keep his ego in check.
His superego.
To keep his ego. I mean, they all work together. But I think the basic ideas are not that complicated. The essential idea that the stronger a person becomes, the more powerful he becomes, so the more it goes to his head and he feels like he's the master of the universe. So there's a complete breakdown. There's an inability to, you can't control himself anymore. And that's the situation which led to the tremendous corruption of the Dora Mabel. And the antidote to that, I think this is a very important point, that it's not just a matter that God destroyed the wicked people and everything else is the same. You don't see that. You don't see that at all, because if that's the case, then why didn't people live 4,000 years after that? and all these other factors. Because what happens is that a new type of Adam emerges. It's the type of Adam that we can identify with. Okay?
Yeah.
Rabbit?
Yeah.
Is there an idea that if a person sees a rainbow, he shouldn't be like publicizing it to other people?
What?
If a person sees a rainbow, he shouldn't publicize that to other people and tell them that there's a rainbow outside?
Yeah, I've heard that before. I'm not, you know, where did you see that?
I think it's in the Shulchan Aruch.
Yeah, we gotta go through it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's the reason?
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah. I don't remember now. I'm, you know, we'll have to go through it again if you want. But what does that do with anything?
No, I was just wondering, it seems like a good idea, the rainbow.
Yeah, that's my problem too. It seems like a good idea. I have to just get more, you know, look it up and see what the reason is. To the contrary, you're right, it should be a good thing. God designed it. To go back to the Torah itself, the Pesukim itself, there's no indication that one shouldn't like it. To the contrary, it's something which is good, that he needs this reassurance. That's a positive thing. Okay.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
I think there's a medrash. I didn't see it this time through, but I remember it that I think that during the marble, like it washed away the ground, like down to a certain level.
Yeah.
And that seems like I mean, I know it's a shaky to learn from medrash, but it seems like a riot of what you're saying, that it was a different world afterwards.
Yeah.
Because he said he washed away the ground means that he exposed a new part of the character of the world.
What's the medrash again, though, right?
That the waters of the marble actually washed away one layer of the ground down to like a few amos.
Yeah, good point. Good point. I think that with this idea, you'll see many of these midrashim, which will begin to make sense. But you're right. What is the significance of that? Who cares?
It means he exposed a new aspect of the nature of worlds.
Exactly. Exactly. All these midrashim fit in. Mm-hmm. Now, once you have this idea, if you look at the Pesukim itself, that after the marble is a whole new reality here, because there's new laws coming into the picture. And there's another change that takes place, the fear of man and the animals. Why? That itself is a very powerful point. So the idea being that it's not just destruction, but it's destruction and recreation, and the objective of the recreation is to produce these types of changes, seems to be really, you know, very, very well grounded. And if you now you go to more chazal, so I believe they'll fit into this context. All right, guys, have a good time.
What about Noah being taken out of the teva?
I can't
remember Noah in the teva.
What about it?
We didn't answer that one.
Well, now think about it. Now you have more information.
Okay.
Before you were approaching it with limited information. Now with more information, maybe you can think of something.
Okay.
Well, can I ask you one question? The analogy doesn't seem to be completely exact, because by the light, when it gets broken up, so it recombines to its original form, which was the original light. But over here, by mankind, it's true he got broken up, but when it gets recombined, it's not to the original form.
So you have a kasha.
What was that?
It doesn't matter, though. It doesn't, for the purpose that it's supposed to serve, it doesn't have to be that exact. It doesn't have to be that exact. Obviously, you know what I'm saying? You're not going to have... Bear in mind, it's a sign. In order to function as a sign, we're concerned with the essential idea.
Right.
Like, you're not going to be worried about every particularity. It's not like we're learning a sukkah and we have to answer up every question, you know? So, Enochinami, you're right, but in terms of the sign, it's perfect.
Okay.
Okay, guys, Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Take care.
Shabbat Shalom.
Bye.